Water is a conduit. It can be empowered with the power of five elements: space, air, fire, earth. We can use a mantra, we can use an intention. It can evoke higher entities, gods. We can leave a covered glass jar of water and it becomes Aganeya, meaning filled with heat of the sun. It captures the heat of the sun, the power of the sun. And when we drink this water, it warms us and it's good for digestion. According to Ayurveda, water needs to be digested also. Water that is left out in a covered glass jar in full moon, it'll be cooling for the mind and also will support anxiety and it will support the mind. In fact, if you've heard how to make sun tea or moon tea, this is how we make it. Physically, water not only nourishes us but cleanses us, good hygiene, but also energetically, if you think about it physically, the urine, the sweat or the lymphatic fluid, they are the cleansing action of water. In fact, women, when we get our periods, the menstrual blood is not just cleaning the unfertilized cell and lining, but you know, we collect stress and the stress sticks to our tissues and all of it is, it's like a bloodletting, and the water, which is manifested as blood. In fact, blood is a manifestation of both water and a fire combination. It is cleansing us. Earth is two-thirds water, and the creatures who live on Earth, us humans, we also have two-thirds water, our blood, plasma, the water in our system. The liquid is considered the element water. There is a water cycle that keeps life alive on the planet. In fact, life started when there was water. I asked my kid once, where does the water you drink come from? And the answer was from a bottle. And this was years ago. Then I realized I need to do some education about water. And we as a society are completely alienated from where our water is coming from. Sources of water in the modern Western world are basically rivers, and the water is collected in the dam. It's filtered because there's all kind of chemical processes that happen to kill heavy metals, bacterial contamination, and so on. But in ancient texts, it talks about water that comes from rain, from hailstones, from snowfall, from glaciers, from springs, from well. So we're going to be talking about all of that. And I will also touch on Ayurvedic significance of what kind of water from what source is good for what dosha. But we were going to start with the spiritual significance of water. Let me ask our resident Vedic expert, Pandit Atul, what is the spiritual significance of water?
Let's start with looking at how water is viewed in Western society. As you said, water is basically, it's a chemical, right? It's a chemical, it dissolves things, and water needs to be pure. And pure means it doesn't have anything in it that's poisonous that can cause damage to the human body. It doesn't have parasites, bacteria, and there are all kinds of microbes and multicellular microscopic organisms that can live in water. So Western approach to water management is all about, let's get rid of all these things and make the water pure. Now, that's fine. But the result is that we are basically viewing water as a chemical. Really, the Vedic perspective is, yes, your water does need to be pure. It needs to be free of contamination. And there are kind of rule of thumb type of things that are followed to make sure of that. But there are energetic properties to water. And really, that's what we're talking about here. What are the energetic and spiritual properties of water? So I just wanted to start by putting that stick in the ground and saying, yes, we're not really talking about, you know, drink water from anywhere and it's okay. But we're talking about where your water comes from also is significant. Spiritual significance of water is that water is one of the five major elements. Consider our planet. Our planet Earth has such a large amount of water within it. Many people are not really aware, and even recent research is starting to show this. There's actually an ocean of water within the rocks that make up the Earth's crust. If you go down deep enough, there are huge amounts of water, even more than is contained in all of the Earth's oceans. So this is, you know, really an amazing thing. And if you think about it, if you go deeper, then you have fire. So Earth itself, the planet, has water. We have water in us. We are primarily water. Water is such an important element. And when we touch water as part of rituals, it gives us some cleansing. It gives us some purification. It also grounds us. And when I say ground, I mean in the sense that it connects us to part of the pure essence of life.
So my question to you is, how do we empower water? So what do we do? Take water in a glass, obviously clean water, and we just do some chanting on it. So how does that work?
When we touch water, we do this as part of rituals. We'll take a little bit of water in our hand and we'll sip it. And then we'll say some mantra.
Like the Gange cha Yamune cha Godavari Saraswati Narmade Sindhu Kaveri Jalesmin Sanandim Kuru.
Yes, this is called the Tirthavahana Mantra. It means that we take a little bit of water in a clean container and we say this mantra while touching the water. And we're invoking all seven holy rivers, Ganga, Yamuna, Narmada, Sindhu, Kaveri, that they should be present in this water. Because we want the energetic properties of these very special holy rivers to come in that water so that we can have a positive spiritual effect from using that water.
So water can be used for invocation of higher beings?
Absolutely. Water is a critical element, and water is required for every type of ritual, for every type of connection to the divine. We'll sip water and say some mantra. We will sip water and we'll do some ritual. We will put some drops of water on the articles that we're offering to cleanse them in a spiritual sense, to say, I want to remove all the things that are non-essential. If any thing has come that may have contaminated this, let it be cleansed.
So we talked about this mantra where we are invoking deities, and we know that in the Vedic culture, every river is actually a female deity, is like a demigoddess. And of course, like Ganga Ji is a goddess who has a crocodile, and that's her personal vehicle and so on. Every water body has a spirit guide. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. If we think of water as a live element, and there is life everywhere, of course, there are living beings that live in water, even the microscopic things, paramecia, amoebas, and so forth. But there's also beings that we don't perceive and who are considered to be the ruler or the entity who resides in every body of water. And it's not just in Vedic culture, it's in other traditional cultures as well. Like in the Japanese Shinto culture, there are river spirits and there are lake spirits, and these are given respect. We don't disrespect them. Now, someone might say, well, this is just the way that primitive peoples try to respect nature. And, you know, yeah, it is respecting nature. Why is respecting nature a bad thing? But even more than that, it is recognizing that the world we live in is not a world of dead matter. It's a living world. And when we treat the world with disregard, it can kill that living nature. When we are viewing these spirits as the entities that they are, deserving our respect, they will reciprocate with us, and they will also help us in our daily activities and even in our spiritual pursuits. number two is we also respect rules, like we don't go bathing in a river at night. Why? Because it is considered to disturb the entities that are ruling that body of water. It's their time to take rest. And water does need time to rest. It needs time to recover. If we go bathe in water, it also is absorbing some of our own, you know, dead skin cells and bacteria and so forth. And there's also time needed for the entities that live in the water to sleep. And the spiritual beings, the subtle entities that rule the water, they also need their time of rest.
Yes, there is the story where Krishna's father, Nanda Baba, went in, took bath in an inappropriate time, and he was captured by the servants of Varuna, who is the deity of water.
Yes, that's a very interesting story, and it goes back to that, you know, Nanda Baba, Krishna's father, he had kind of a lapse of awareness, and he took bath at a time which was inappropriate, which was a time not to disturb. And because this is a time in history where everyone respected the deities of water, he was captured. Now, the reason for that was actually that Varunadev, the ruling authority over all bodies of water, really wanted to see Krishna. He wanted the blessing of seeing Krishna, and he knew that if Krishna's father was arrested and brought to him, Krishna would be the one to come to spring dad out of the, you know, watery jail. So that's exactly what Krishna did.
That's a wonderful story. By the way, Varuna is our Poseidon. Use the word Varuna. He's the presiding deity for all water. Karma that might be associated with doing would be, we as a humanity would be punished by these higher entities. For example, so you know, there may be climate change that is a direct result of a karmic effect of we, and even scientifically, you know, overkilling of fishes in the ocean, for example, has an effect. And so climate change would be one effect. Changing of climate is going to affect basically life. Would that be a karmic effect?
Well, absolutely it is. You can say it's a karmic effect. We can also look at immediate causes and effects.
Like what?
Well, you know, science views the world as a living organism, you know, which,
right,
which is really kind of funny because, yes, that's what we've been saying all along.
Oh, now, tell me about it.
And now they're saying, you know, hey, the world is a living thing. You need to respect the world. You need to respect the oceans. The oceans are a living thing. There are coral reefs that are getting bleached out. They're dying. And this is like a sign of sickness of this living being that provides stability to our global climate patterns. And then, of course, you know, ignorant people say that, well, I don't see how this is affecting me. You live on the earth, you fools. You are, you know, living on the breast of Mother Earth, and you live at her mercy. And if she decides to withdraw her blessings from you, you have no idea how bad life can get. You know, it's a fundamental disrespect for nature. You can view the immediate causes, and we can also look at it in this way as a spiritual view that, you know, this is a blessing, and it has been given to us that we should take care of it. There's a saying that one Native American chief, Seattle, had, which I always thought was very poignant. He said that, you know, the Europeans, the white men, they think that I have inherited this land from my forefathers, and we, the natives, we think that we are borrowing this from our children. And this is actually the way that we think in Vedic culture, that we are here on earth and we are given resources. It's our responsibility to respect them, to use them properly, to use them wisely, and to live in harmony with nature.
Almost seems like, you know, polluting the rivers and harming the ocean and dumping stuff in water bodies is almost like a level of sin.
Oh, it is. Absolutely. It's condemned. There is one ancient sage, Rishabhadev, who said, Nunam pramatta kurute vikarma yadindriya prite aprinoti nastadumanye yat atmanoyam asannapi klesha asadeha. This kind of mad headlong rush for doing only whatever is pleasing to the senses is called vikarma. It is called acting against proper direction. Vikarma means I act in a way where I don't observe any rules, I don't observe any restrictions, and I only act for my sense enjoyment. This leads to bad results, both in this life and in the next.
So what is it that we can do to reduce the karmic reaction? Well, we can stop buying too many things, for example, eat less fish, which is caught by unfair means, or use sustainable products, sustainable food, where water is not mistreated, where oceans are not polluted. And number two, we can also go and clean up a river or a beach. That is good karma. Would that be a good karma?
Absolutely. And as I said, making good choices as consumers, sustainability, for example.
Yeah.
Organic farming doesn't use pesticides and it doesn't use chemical fertilizer. Runoff from pesticides and chemical fertilizer has caused more